is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
It's Tuesday, November 5th, 2019, and this is the first Baseball Tonight podcast of the offseason. I'm Buster Olney, and producing back in Bristol is Troy Farkas. And Troy, we were supposed to do the season-ending podcast last Friday, but we didn't have it because we had a massive windstorm came through. I think you experienced it as well, yes?
Yeah, Buster. I was in Connecticut, and these winds were insane. And it was Halloween night. It was so eerie. I'm walking around town, and I'm passing out some candy. But I felt like the trees were going to collapse at some point. Like, I was fearing for my little third-floor Bristol apartment that I might wake up, like, with a tree in my face.
Yeah, trees went down in our area for sure, which is why at about 2 o'clock in the morning on Friday, we were without any kind of services, had no power. We had no cable. We had no TV. We had no internet. We didn't get back the internet and TV until Sunday. So that's why we decided just to defer the podcast this week. So sorry for the inconvenience. And I know I promised one last Friday, but we're hoping to make good today. We're going to have a conversation coming up with Keith Law and Tim Kirchin previewing this coming off season. We'll also be hearing from Rena Bonina with your Bleacher tweets. On Monday, the Mets introduced their new manager, Carlos Beltran. Here's Brody Van Wagenen, the Mets executive vice president and general manager.
I think Carlos has experience and he has life experience. When he sat with us in the room, he knew what the mission was, and it's to win, just to win games. He knew that that was going to come off the foundation and the support of players. And if our players perform, we win. And Carlos understands these players in a very unique way. And as he talked to us, he indicated he wants to serve. At this point in his life, he wants to serve the community, serve the players, and serve the Mets fans.
Troy, you have life experience. I have life experience. I should have applied for that job.
I know, Buster. Gosh, they should have hired me. New York, it's not too far from me. I'm an upstate New York guy, so I think I could have fit in well.
All right, we're being a little facetious. We'll see what Keith Law and Tim think about this hiring. Carlos Beltran addressed the question of his experience.
There's no doubt that there's things that I need to continue to grow in this game of baseball. I have a lot of experience as a player. I understand that experience as a manager is something that I have a good group of people around me to support me through the process. So I'm excited. I have a lot of mentors out there that have reached out to me to help me in the process. So I'm just looking forward to what is ahead.
The Mets have a lot of good players, and Carlos talked about that.
Well, I think we have a good ball club. There's no doubt that we have to work hard in spring training, focus in areas that we didn't play well last year. But that's everything started with creating the environment. For me, what is positive about this is I just want to create an environment in the clubhouse with the players that they feel happy to show up to the ballpark every single day and give their best. So I'm excited with the players that we have, with the pitching staff that we have, so it's going to be a fun year.
Most of the Washington Nationals were at the White House on Monday to be honored for their championship of last week. Reliever Sean Doolittle, third baseman Anthony Rendon did not attend. When Kurt Suzuki was introduced, he pulled out a Make America Great Again hat, which got him a hug from the president. Maybe the most memorable moment of the weekend was from the parade on Saturday when infielder Brian Dozier ripped off his shirt.
My wife's gonna kill me.
Yeah, he was having a great time over the weekend. All the Nationals were, and we'll be talking more about that. Decisions have been made about some of the opt-outs. J.D. Martinez is not opting out of his deal. He's got 3 years left with the Boston Red Sox. Steven Strasburg did opt out of the last 4 years of his deal with the Washington Nationals. The Yankees restructured the deal with reliever Aroldis Chapman, essentially giving him a one-year extension. We'll be talking about a lot of these moves coming up with Tim and Keith. But first, one of the best aspects of ButcherBox is how convenient it is. A box of 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, heritage-breed pork, and more shipped right to your door. It doesn't get any easier than that. But Thanksgiving is right around the corner, and if you're hosting, things can be stressful. ButcherBox can help. This holiday season, new customers can get a free turkey in their first box. That's right. ButcherBox is making the experience of cooking a Thanksgiving meal better. Get your turkey delivered to your door instead of dealing with long lines and crowded aisles at the grocery store. And like their beef, chicken, salmon, pork, and scallops, you know the turkey you'll be serving from ButcherBox was humanely raised the way it's meant to be, with no added hormones or antibiotics ever. I love the meat I get from ButcherBox. I've talked about how much I love the bacon more than anything else. The hamburger's tremendous. I'm already putting together my Thanksgiving weekend order. I'm going to have some steaks in there, which are my son's favorite cut of beef. Take some stress out of your schedule this holiday season. Sign up at ButcherBox.com/BBTN today and get a free Thanksgiving turkey plus $20 off your first box. That's ButcherBox.com/BBTN for a free Thanksgiving turkey plus $20 off your first box. ButcherBox.com/BBTN. So in this first podcast, we're going to have a roundtable, and joining me today are Keith Law, of course, scouts for ESPN, writes for ESPN, and Tim Kirchin, who covers baseball for ESPN. Guys, how you doing, Tim?
I'm well, Buster. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Keith.
I'm good. Happy off season.
Yeah, right. There is no off season. I think they should change the name of that because of how this all works out. I mean, immediately, you know, the Astros lose the World Series and Gerrit Cole is wearing a Scott Boras cap. And that tells you how quickly things turn into business once the World Series is over. Yesterday we get the announcement from the Mets that Carlos Beltran is a new manager. Tim, I was surprised in the end. I felt like that, the perfect fit would have been Eduardo Perez. I like the sort of the pliability of Eduardo's personality and what I feel like is generally a dysfunctional situation. And my question is about Carlos going in there, sort of what's his level of patience as he wades through the various pressures and crossfires that go on with the Mets? What'd you think?
Well, I was mildly surprised, and his patience level had better be very high because there's a very great involvement with the front office, with the managing of that team. I'm sure Mickey Callaway will tell you that, and I think that's one reason why they never really had significant interest in Joe Girardi. It's why they didn't even call Buck Showalter, and it's because this is something that the front office really likes to be involved in. And Carlos Beltran had better be aware that this is how it's going to work. I'm not sure it would have worked that well with Eduardo Perez because he's a dear friend of mine and I know how he operates and he's going to do things his way. So maybe this is a sign that the Mets found the guy that they could work with more than anyone. And maybe that and high profile guy, that was the beginning. That was part of this from the beginning, is they wanted someone to make a splash. And I guess a former Met and a borderline Hall of Famer could make a splash more than maybe some others.
Keith.
I wasn't surprised at all. I think it's terrible hiring. I think it's a terrible process. It's not even the least bit surprising because this is basically how they hired their GM, right? In both cases, they hired a guy with absolutely zero relevant experience for the job. They hired off the interview, and maybe they hired because they wanted to make some headlines, but they ignored the resume. Managers without experience, generally, there are exceptions, generally do not fare very well, especially their first time around. And not only does Carlos Beltran have no managerial experience, he doesn't even have coaching experience. He hasn't done anything in his life remotely close to what he's going to be asked to do as a major league manager. Now, you could say, and I'm sure the Mets might argue, we don't care. We're going to make a lot of the managerial decisions from the front office. To which I say, good luck with that. That really hasn't worked out in a lot of situations. And Beltran may be a wonderful guy. He may be a great manager of people. We have no idea. And the Mets have no idea. They have absolutely no idea if he's going to be any good at this job, because they can't, because there's absolutely no evidence in either direction to say what kind of manager he's going to be. If I were a Mets fan, I'd say, oh my God, this is more of the same.
I agree with you, Keith. I do think that the best chance for making this turn out well, in part, would be if Carlos Beltran gets some really strong staffers. He's going to need some really strong staffers to try to fill in the gap that you're talking about. You know, two names that pop to mind. Like, he's never run a pitching staff, which, you know, 5 years ago was considered to be the most important thing that a manager does. He's never been involved in those decisions. So I'd say go hire someone like Larry Rothschild, and his bench coach, go get Joey Cora, who spent, you know, 20 years in dugouts, since he's been a player. Tim, if there's any chance of success, those things have to happen. What do you think?
There's no doubt. I agree with Keith. I am still amazed that there is no value given to the experience of a manager, the wisdom it takes to know what the heck you're supposed to do during the running of a game. And even though front offices like the Mets insist on telling you, we'll handle the game for you, you just have to handle the people, I still don't necessarily believe in that. You have to have done this job to be able to do this job, especially in a market like New York, where you're up against the Yankees, you're in a really difficult division. So I think Carlos Beltran needs a really good bench coach, a really good pitching coach, and a bunch of other coaches around him to help him, because as Keith said, he's going to need help having never done this job.
All right, there's some player decisions that are coming down already. Yesterday we learned that J.D. Martinez, Keith, has opted in. He had an opportunity to get out of the last 3 years of his contract. I think it just comes down to this. There weren't other teams that were going to be willing to pay him $65 to $75 million to be a DH. What do you think?
I was a little surprised just because people I talked to within the Red Sox and with some other clubs thought he was going to opt out. Maybe it was just the thinking that he would, you know, Boris guys typically opt out anyway, just to explore the market. It's not a particularly deep free agent market for bats this year. But ultimately, I think you're all right. If you start to, because he's a DH. He can't really play any other position. He can't play any position on the field. So you just knock out the National League immediately. I think if you start walking through all the American League teams and consider which ones have the opening at DH and are going to be willing to spend that kind of money, I'm not sure that there were any other suitors, and he could have gone out there and potentially had a market of maybe one team. Because I think if he had opted out, the Red Sox would have said, fine, we'll put that money somewhere else.
Yeah, I was going to follow up with, if you gave truth serum to the people running the Red Sox now, do you think they were hoping that he'd opt out? Because I believe the answer is yes.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I'd like to hear what Tim says, but I think 100%.
Tim, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree mostly with Keith on this, because obviously this is going to get in the way of the Mookie Betts signing if there is going to be one. They're so adamant about staying under the $208 million luxury tax. I don't know how they do that with J.D. Martinez making $23 million next year and having to sign Mookie Betts to some amazingly long contract. So, and you're right, he is a DH, and I'm just not sure there were many people out there that were looking for a DH. White Sox, Rangers, I don't know, but maybe not enough, and now the Red Sox have even more decisions ahead now that this one is over.
Yeah, and I, you know, love to spend more time on this, but we've got other topics to get to, and any baseball fan, just go through the American League standings team by team and say, would that team spend $25 million on a DH? Just team by team, just not any islands for him to explore, I think, in the end. I want to ask you guys about the Steven Strasburg situation. He opted out of his contract the other day. And I think, Tim, there's still an excellent chance that he winds up going back there, because Steven Strasburg is not someone who likes change. I think this is all clearly a case of, hey, you know, under the existing terms of his remaining contract, he was going to make, if you factor in deferrals, about $88 million over the last 4 years. And his value clearly is higher than that. This is just a case of Scott Boras working to extract value that, you know, he wouldn't have in a J.D. Martinez contractual, you know, free agency at this point.
Yeah, I agree, Buster. I think there's a better than average chance he's going back there. Remember, he never got to free agency in the first place. He signed before he got to free agency because I just don't think he's built for the circus that is now a huge free agent negotiation with all sorts of teams involved, like Machado and Harper went through last year. So I think this is a case where he opts out and the Nationals say, all right, we'll give you some more money, because they have to, because he earned it with in today's market. It'll just be interesting to see if the Padres or the Dodgers or the Angels or some other team just loads up and gives him anything he wants. I still don't think that's going to happen, and I still think the best option is he's going back to Washington. He loves it there, and they love him.
Getting factors, Keith, in his free agency. One, he had Tommy John surgery in 2010. Generally speaking, when you talk to teams, you talk to doctors, they say 7 years is about the time you begin to wonder about a relapse, kind of like the tread going off a tire, and we're now 9 years past that. And the second thing is he's 31. He's not 28. He's not 29 years old. He's in his 30s already. What do you see here?
Look, I'd probably still take the risk on him. I agree with you. I've heard that same number, that 7 years is sort of a median outcome. But the truth is the error bars around that are pretty hot, pretty wide, right? Some guys don't need it for 10 plus years, manage to finish their careers without it. And then there are guys who, I mean, Daniel Hudson comes to mind. He blew out before he even got back to the big leagues. He had to have a revision surgery because he tore the new ligament while rehabbing. So I think you factor that in, but it's probably not going to deter many teams from bidding on Strasburg. The one team I could see potentially as a real threat to the Nationals retaining Strasburg would be the Padres. They have the need for a top-end starter. He's from there. He went to college there. With all this talk, and I don't know Strasburg at all, but the sort of reputation he has is that he likes comfortable situations. Who am I to criticize? I do too. Maybe that is the right situation for him. Keeps him in the National League, gets him home, puts him in a great pitcher's ballpark. The team is really kind of on the come right now with all this great young talent that would be arriving there already or arriving soon to help him. I mean, I think they could put together a pretty compelling pitch for him and say, this is a chance for you to come home. We will create the type of environment that you need to thrive.
Keith, I would totally get it from Strasburg's point of view. Like if the Padres, let's say, put $175 million on the table or $200 million on the table for Strasburg, I would totally get it from his perspective. Yet again, with the Padres, I find myself asking the questions like, really? Remember, this is a team that didn't go over $100 million in total payroll until 2 years ago. They now have Manny Machado locked up at $30 million a year. They have Eric Hosmer locked up for, what, 6 more years. They've got 3 more years of Will Myers. They're paying those three guys $75 million annually for the next 3 years. And the idea of tacking on a $25 to $30 million a year pitcher, I still, in the back of my mind, in the front of my mind, I'm thinking sustainability. Like, that is a situation. You're creating a future problem, especially when you're talking about, again, investing in a pitcher in his early 30s. That's something if you're the Yankees, you're the Red Sox, maybe even the Nationals, you can do that because you look at your revenues and say, we can cover that eventually. The Padres, I don't think it's wise business. What do you think?
I think I'm not going to disagree with anything you just said because I think that's all rational and correct. I think two things. One, the Myers and Hosmer contracts, they're just sunk costs, especially the Hosmer one. I mean, that I think many of us called that as a disaster. You just have to say that's money spent. There's nothing we can do about it. The second thing is they're in a situation now where they've been building for a couple of years. Been a lot of hype around the system. I've ranked them the number one system for a couple of years now. They probably need to start putting some wins out there to sort of convert the fan interest now into attendance, ratings, revenues. The best way for them to do that this offseason going into next year, I think, is acquiring some kind of top-end starter. Maybe it's not through free agency because they don't want to spend the money. Strasburg just happens to be appealing because he's really good and he's local and they may have a little additional leverage with him that they would not have with Cole or with any of the other sort of second-tier starter free agents like Zach Wheeler.
Tim, is it insane for the Padres to pursue another high-priced free agent?
Well, financially it is, but I'm with Keith. If you're going to build a long-term winning team in San Diego, you're going to need more than what they have right now. Could they afford it? Well, I'm with you, Buster. I don't think they can afford it, but sometimes you just got to say, all right, we're going for it. They already tried that once years ago, and it didn't work out very well. And maybe they'll, you know, have second thoughts about that. But he's a difference maker, and maybe they'll run up something, but they can't afford it from what I can tell.
Keith, I know you were surprised that the Yankees didn't extend a qualifying offer to Didi Gregorius, who was coming back this year from Tommy John surgery and really had more downs than ups in terms of his performance.
Yeah, I just wonder if he's – I don't wonder. I feel very strongly that he is going to bounce back this year, that a lot of it was just rust, that it was time off, a lot of missed at-bats, never really had the equivalent of a spring training. You talk to hitters who've gone through Tommy John surgery, they virtually all come back at the plate. They may not come back as the same in terms of throwing, but that it can take some time just to get used to the new ligament and maybe tearing some scar tissue or getting over the fear that you're going to swing too hard and potentially re-tear it. He'll be past all of that. And there are no good middle infielders available. The shortstop market this winter in free agency is extremely thin. Now, maybe it's that the Yankees said, well, getting a fairly low draft pick kind of isn't worth it. We really don't want him to take the qualifying offer. I think he's going to get so many multi-year offers from elsewhere, and having something compensation attached to him wasn't going to slow down his market at all. So I feel like they just sort of gave up the possibility of getting a low draft pick, but a little extra bonus pool money, which to me is that's the more relevant part. If you're the Yankees, who've drafted really well over the last decade or so, get a little extra money for your draft bonus pool. They could have done that, I think, at pretty minimal risk that he would accept.
You mentioned, Keith, the lack of quality among middle infielders in the free agent class. Generally speaking, I've heard from general managers that they think the free agent class as a whole is not very good. You just had a list of top 50 free agents posted on ESPN.com. In your opinion, is it bad is what I'm hearing? That, you know, besides the Gerrit Coles and Anthony Rendon's, once you get past that first layer, it's pretty ugly?
I think it's pretty typical now, which is not to say it's not ugly. I mean, you may say this is ugly. Free agency just kind of ain't what it used to be. I mean, we're three old men now. We can all sort of, back in my day, everyone went to free agency. But they don't, right? Players sign lots of extensions. Therefore, and teams really go out of their way to try to sign young players to extensions so that when players hit free agency, they're often in their 30s. All the guys we're talking about at the top of the list, they're 30, 31, 32. I don't know if anybody's 32, but a lot of 30 and 31-year-olds in free agency, even the best guys. There's no Machado or Harper types. And after the first, 10 to 12 names, it does start to thin out pretty quickly. I just think that's standard now, and it's probably going to be standard going forward. So I say this class is fine. It could be worse. We've had years where there were really no stars at the top of the free agent class. This year, I would argue we've got three in Cole, Rendon, and Strasburg.
We've already mentioned Scott Boris's name on this podcast, and we're going to be talking about him a lot, Tim, as we move forward, because he represents just about everybody at the top of the board. Gerrit Cole, Anthony Rendon, Strasburg, Marcell Ozuna, Dallas Keuchel. What do you think that effect is going to be? And how do you forecast that in terms of, you know, how it might affect the baseball calendar?
Well, I think we should all be prepared for a very long off season, meaning Scott, this is his MO. He's going to take his time until he gets exactly what he wants. I am amazed how patient he is and how he is willing to wait. Prince Fielder, you know, Max Scherzer, all these guys that were just out there and were thinking, are they going to get good jobs eventually? And then, pow, they get a tremendous contract. And I think that will be the case here, especially with Rendon, especially with Gerrit Cole, who are going to have all sorts of teams interested in them and, you know, record-breaking money, especially for Cole. So I think we should all be prepared that this is not going to happen at the winter meetings, much like last year, and it's possible we'll go even into the new year without two great players especially being signed. At least that's how I see it, and I hope I'm wrong.
Keith, what do you think? Do you think it's going to be a real busy time at the winter meetings?
No, unfortunately. I certainly wish. You know, the winter meetings used to be a lot more fun for us to cover because stuff was constantly happening. I am afraid that it's going to be pretty slow. And I assume you guys saw this whole proposal. Major League Baseball wanted to set a deadline for multi-year contracts at the winter meetings. The union said no. Of course they said no. Wouldn't teams just wait till the winter meetings and then make a bunch of one-year offers afterwards? That to me seemed like a non-starter.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you on that. And we are. It's going to be a slog because we're just going to be sitting here waiting for a lot of these deals to come down. I want to go through some teams before we go, and to just give me a minute on each of these teams. Keith, I'll start with you. Give me something on the Red Sox now being operating under Chaim Bloom as the head of baseball ops.
Big fan. I've known Chaim since he got started with Tampa Bay, actually. and think very highly of him, both as a baseball person and just as a person in general. I think Red Sox people, Red Sox personnel have to be really pleased too, that I think there's going to be a fair amount of continuity. I don't think he's the type who'd come in and clean house. I don't think he's got any real driving need to clean house. I also think if the mandate is going to be to trade Mookie Betts because they decide they can't or don't want to re-sign him, or just because he wants to go to free agency, which also seems likely, he's probably a good person to do that. He had a great track record. Tampa Bay had a great track record while he was there in trades. And I know he's somebody who has, just from talking to a lot of people in Tampa Bay on the scouting and analytics sides, they all really praise him for his ability to synthesize information from both groups to help drive decisions.
Tim, I want to ask you about the Nationals, the defending champions now. I talked to the source yesterday who said that he thinks Rendon is going to wind up with either the Dodgers, who we talked about, you know, as a possible match during the season, or going back to the Nationals, because Rendon, like Strasburg, is not someone who likes change. What do you foresee for the Nationals as they pivot forward to 2020?
Well, note my hesitation here. I think he's going back to the Nationals because I'm with you. I know him, and I don't think he likes, again, the circus that comes with being a prime free agent. He's a very comfortable guy where he is. He loves that team, and they love him. And the Nationals are going to really have to pay for this. I had one of their guys tell me, if you think our people were upset that Bryce Harper left, wait till you see how upset they're going to be if Anthony Rendon leaves. That's how important he is to that team, and I was told that long before he got red hot and carried them in the playoffs and was great in October. So I think if the Nationals are interested in being a frontline organization for a few more years, they got to re-sign that guy.
Keith, what do you think the priorities will be for the Houston Astros, who I think that even though the Nationals won the World Series, by year's end, there was a consensus in baseball that the Astros were the best team. So now that Gerrit Cole probably is moving on to another team, what do you see for them?
I could see them trying to target a starter in free agency, try to do a Charlie Morton type deal, find Zach Wheeler would fit. Somebody threw out there, I wish I knew who tweeted this, maybe Joe Sheen or Dan Zimborski, joking about them picking up Danny Salazar and turning him, you know, getting 150 innings of a 3 ERA out of him because it's what they do. Somebody who fits the specific profile of starting pitcher that they've decided, particularly on their analytics side, they really work well with. Would not surprise me at all to see them do that, hoping that Forrest Whitley, who looked very good in the Arizona Fall League, is ready to contribute to their rotation this season.
And Tim, last one, what do you see for the Cubs? You know, coming off another disappointing season as they move forward, their new manager is our old friend David Ross.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to make a serious decision about the core players that they have there. What are they going to do? Rizzo, Bryant, Baez, that group, are they going to keep them all or are they going to make a move? And that, I think the only move they make is trading Chris Bryant, and I think that's very much up in the air. I'm not sold at all that they feel like he's on his way down and we need to deal him. But if they're going to sign him and Baez long-term, it's possible somebody has to go. So my guess is they're going to give David Ross a shot to take this core and make them good again, really good again. And I think there's an outside chance of that happening. But so I just don't see them saying, all right, we got a new manager, we got to break up the team. I don't see it that way.
And Chris Bryant is represented by Scott Boras.
Oh, what do you know?
He's going to be talked about more than any other person in baseball this winter, no doubt about it. Keith, Tim, thanks for doing this.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Rena Wong is a Twins fan known on Twitter as Rena Benina, and at the end of the regular season, she was helping us out every Friday with the Bleacher Tweets, and we have Rena again in this final podcast before we dive into the offseason fully. And Rena, so you as a Twins fan, I'm curious, what did you think of Brian Dozier during the national celebration going nuts, the former Minnesota player ripping off his shirt, having a great time during the Nationals championship celebration?
Oh, that was incredible. I'm not going to lie. A big reason why I wanted the Nationals to win was because I wanted to see Brian Dozier at every single celebration. And my favorite was that at the very end, after they had won the World Series, no one else took their shirt off. It was just Brian Dozier. And there was this one video. I mean, it must have been like 35 degrees outside and everyone was in coats, everyone was bundled up, but there's Brian Dozier just having the time of his life. That was my favorite part of the whole World Series.
That surprised me. I've known Brian for a long time. I didn't think he had that in him, right? As crazy as he went, that was something I didn't expect.
No, me either. I mean, I obviously haven't known Brian personally, but he just seemed almost like a father figure with the Twins. I mean, you would have right. never expected anything like that from him.
Yeah, well, really cool. He's one of those guys like Kurt Suzuki, like Ryan Zimmerman, Yan Gomes, Brian Dozier, a lot of veterans on that team. Are you really happy that they got to have that experience over the last 5 days? And, you know, apparently Brian Dozier inspired everybody because they all ripped their shirts off at the Capitals game while they were sitting in their private box. So they were having a lot of fun. All right, let's get to the Bleacher Tweets today.
Sounds great. Kicking it off, we've got, of course, CrossFit School of Sweat at School of Sweat. Who is the team of the decade? Two multiple champions to pick from and their overall performance in the 2010s. First, we've got the San Francisco Giants, who have two division titles and they were once last in their division. And then we've got the Boston Red Sox with four division titles and three times last in their division.
Rena, for me, it comes down to World Series championships. I think of the Giants as the team of the decade. Three championships in 5 years. About as close as you're going to come to, I think, in the last decade, saying that team was a dynasty. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to disagree here. I'm going to go with the Boston Red Sox.
Okay.
I followed Boston strong with my roommates during my freshman year of college because one of my neighbors had really strong ties to Boston. And just the whole country was so invested. And I really saw that as the biggest event, biggest thing of the 2010s. And so got to go with the Red Sox. And plus, they're in some sort of a conversation every single year, whether that's good or bad. And they've really, truly seen it all.
Yeah, somebody needs to tell the owners then that they're the team of the decade because they fire general managers constantly. And they exactly. fired their managers as well, making all kinds of changes.
Maybe that's what made them the team of the decade, actually.
There you go.
Moving on, we've got Tim Valenzuela at Tim Valenzuela. For the 13th time since 2001, a team won the World Series that missed the postseason the year before. Which non-2019 playoff team has the best chance to win the 2020 World Series?
I would go number one, the Indians, because they're in a division, which, you know, the last year was won by your Twins. And they feel like they potentially could be poised for a bounce back season. Number two, I'd have the Mets, and number three, I'd have the Cubs. What about you?
Wow. I actually have none of those teams on my list.
Okay.
I actually only have two, and the first is the Phillies, because I think that it's fact that they massively underperformed this year. I actually had them penned as a wild card team this year, and that was one of the few I got wrong. And then next I've got the Angels, because I think they're ready to win, and I really think that if they were to snag Garrett Cole from the Astros, that's enough to turn the tide in that entire division. I am also kind of wary, but I would also put the Red Sox in there. I think they also massively underperformed, and now that they've snagged J.D. Martinez, I don't see them going downhill as much as I had maybe last Friday or even the week before.
Yeah, if you tell me that Garrett Cole is going to be in the Angels, and I could totally see that, the Angels making the playoffs. But for now, I'm going to say Indians.
For now, yeah. We'll see. Moving away from the World Series, we've got Eric E. at Esoteric Eric. It seems that the Brewers have cleared up some cap space with the Anderson and Thames moves and Moose and Grandal opting out. How surprised would you be from 1 to 10 if they make a big run at a free agent, and a big free agent, rather, and who would you see as a realistic candidate?
I would be totally shocked if they made a big, big run at a free agent, because that's just not how they seem to operate. And I think the other thing, too, is that with David Stearns in his front office, I think they've gotten to a point where they have strong belief, like the Tampa Bay Rays, that they can figure it out without spending a lot of money. And I think it's important for small market teams like the Padres, like we were just talking about with Keith, that you avoid that, you know, the potential money pit of investing a lot of money in one player. I think that that's something you'll see the Brewers avoid.
So we would agree we're all sitting around two in that realism?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, sorry, Eric. Next, we've got P.K. Steinberg at P.K. Steinberg. Does J.D. Martinez opting in mean that Mookie Betts is as good as gone from the Red Sox? And I can't tell if he's joking, but maybe to the Twins or Rangers.
Boy, Mookie Betts, I think, is going to get traded by the Red Sox. I think ownership wants Chaim Bloom to make an adjustment. I think that Red Sox fans have to get used to the idea that you're going to get 60 cents in the dollar in return. And you know what? If Mookie is absolutely insistent on the fact that he's going to go into free agency, I would get it from the Red Sox perspective. In terms of a team making a trade for them, I think you have to look at the win now teams, like the Astros, for example. You know, like the Phillies, for example, those teams that we know, you know, the Mets, teams that we know that absolutely are targeting 2020 as a year when they expect to contend for the championship.
Yeah, and that probably won't be the Twins or the Rangers, unfortunately.
Nope.
Next, we've got Caldrax at Caldrax. I'm interested in seeing if Madden gets creative with his use of Ohtani. Is it possible to see Ohtani used as a position player and used as a reliever in the same game?
No, not for now. I think they're still devoted to the idea of Ohtani being a starter. And I know from, you know, conversations with Billy Epler and former manager Brad Ausmus that it's a complicated schedule that they have to work through, where Ohtani, you know, goes through some regimen on one day as he prepares to pitch, and the next day it's a regimen to prepare to hit. And to this point, I have not heard anything from the Angels organization that they would consider using him as a reliever. Now, down the road, it's possible, and Joe Maddon is certainly someone who's open-minded about making those sort of changes, but for now, I don't think that's under consideration.
Last Bleacher tweet of the season actually is from me. So I know that you and I are both really big fans of preemptive overreactions and really big, sometimes unrealistic predictions. So I took to Twitter to see what overreactions and bold predictions that some of the other listeners already have for 2020. And I wanted to see what your thoughts were. And we can visit some of these in a year and see which one of these are winners and which some of these are mariners. So first prediction, we've got Jeremy T. at Jeremy Tiramini. The Yankees spend big on Anthony Rendon to play third base, and Cleveland signs Didi to a one-year deal to play shortstop so that they can trade Lindor.
All right, the way I'll answer your question is on the scale of 1 to 10, what's most likely to happen or least likely to happen, I give that one a 1. I don't think the Yankees will sign Rendon, in part because, as we talked about with Tim, Rendon doesn't seem like someone he wants all the bells and whistles of New York, and I don't think that the Lindor trade conversations will really start in earnest until perhaps next July.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Next, we've got CrossFit School of Sweat, again, at School of Sweat. Mookie Betts signs a new deal with the Red Sox.
I would, before free agency, I'm guessing, right, Rena? That's what he's asking. Essentially, you know, asking the question, could they work out an agreement before he were to go into the open
market?
Okay,
correct.
I'd say the chances of that are a 3, because while, you know, all indications from Mookie's camp are that he wants to go into free agency, boy, if somebody puts down, and I'm just pulling a number out of the air, $350 million in front of you in an offer, Rena, how do you say no? That's a hard thing to do, even if you want to get in the open market.
Exactly. Next, we've got Red Leg Media at Wayne Krinchiki. The Reds will be a surprise team of 2020 after another successful offseason, and they will make a deep run in the 2020 playoffs.
I would say no. I would put the chance of that at, let me put it at a 3 out of 10. Like, I could see some things coming together, but that division's really deep.
Yeah, well, we've got a lot of unrealistic predictions so far. Last but not least, this one's my favorite, from Andy Viker at VeekX. Strasburg and Cole take the Twins to the 2020 title.
0. Rena, I should have just deferred to you to answer that question. You, as a Twins fan, know the answer to that question.
Yeah, I'm 0.001. I mean, what if? You can't, if you put it out there and you shoot for the stars, you could always land in a tree or something and pick up a Zach Wheeler instead, but you gotta shoot for the stars first.
I would say this. I think if they lived there, both those guys, knowing their personalities, they would be totally happy in Minnesota because of how great that market is and how great the fan base is. But in the end, I'm guessing that other teams it would offer a lot more money than the Twins would. That's for sure.
Exactly. Maybe retirement. Minnesota is a great target for both of those guys.
There you go. All right, Rena, thanks for doing this, and thanks for the tweets this year.
Of course. Thank you both again so, so much for having me. It's been an unbelievable season, and can't wait to see what's in store for next year.
And that's it for today. My thanks to Rena, to Keith, to Tim, to Troy. We'll have another offseason podcast in a couple weeks. Troy, what are you thinking? Let's see, you know, it's the 5th today, so like the 19th or the 20th, one of those days?
Yeah, I mean, I'm down for anything, Buster. You say jump, I say how high, and I'll be here.
All right, well, we'll have to do it again. Thanks for listening, and before we go, we need to honor a podcast tradition and hear from former Commissioner Bart Giamatti.
This little piece was originally written one afternoon as the class notes for the class of 1960 in Yale College. I was the class secretary. I had absolutely nothing to say about my classmates. I wrote what you're about to hear. It was properly and immediately rejected by the Yale Alumni Magazine on the grounds that it was completely irrelevant to the purpose of the class notes. I accepted the judgment cheerfully, and then when unaccountably 2 months later I became president, the Alumni Magazine reprinted it. Remarkable, but not as class notes. It breaks your heart. It is designed to break your heart. The game begins in the spring when everything else begins again, and it blossoms in the summer, filling the afternoons and evenings, and then as soon as the chill rains come, it stops and leaves you to face the fall alone. You count on it, rely on it to buffer the passage of time, to keep the memory of sunshine and high skies alive, and then just when the days are all twilight, when you need it most, it stops. Today, October 2nd, a Sunday of rain and broken branches and leaf-clogged drains and slick streets, it stopped, and summer was gone. Somehow the summer seemed to slip by faster this time. Maybe it wasn't this summer, but all the summers that in this, my 40th summer, slipped by so fast. There comes a time when every summer will have something of autumn in it. Whatever the reason, it seemed to me that I was investing more and more in baseball, making the game do more of the work that keeps time fat and slow and lazy. I was counting on the game's deep patterns, three strikes, three outs, three times, three innings, and its deepest impulse to go out and back, to leave and to return home, to set the order of the day and to organize the daylight. I wrote a few things this past summer, the summer that did not last, nothing grand, but some things, and yet that work was just camouflage. The real activity was done with the radio, not the all-seeing, all-falsifying television. And was the playing of the game in the only place it will last? The enclosed green field of the mind. There in that warm, bright place, what the old poet called mutability, does not so quickly come. But out here, on Sunday, October 2nd, when it rains all day, Dame Mutability never loses. She was in the crowd at Fenway yesterday, a gray day full of bluster and contradiction. When the Red Sox came up in the last of the ninth, trailing Baltimore 8-5, well, the Yankees, rain delayed against Detroit, needing only to win one or have Boston lose one to win it all, sat in New York washing down cold cuts with beer and watching the Boston game. Boston had won two, the Yankees had lost two, and suddenly it seemed as if the whole season might go to the last day or beyond, except here was Boston losing 8-5, while New York sat in its family room and put up its feet. Lynn, both ankles hurting now as they had in July, hits a single down the right field line. The crowd stirs. It's on its feet. Hobson, third baseman, former Bear Bryant quarterback, strong, quiet, over 100 RBIs, goes for three breaking balls and is out. The goddess smiles and encourages her agent, a canny journeyman named Nelson Bryles. Now comes the pinch hitter, Bernie Carbo, one-time Rookie of the Year, erratic, quick, a shade too handsome. So laid back, he's always in his soul, stretched out in the tall grass, one arm under his head, watching the clouds and laughing. Now he looks over some low stuff, unworthy of him, and then, uncoiling, sends one out. Straight on a rising line, over the center field wall, no cheap Fenway shot, but all of it, the physics as elegant as the arc the ball describes. New England is on its feet, roaring. The summer will not pass. Roaring, they recall the evening late and cold in 1975, the sixth game of the World Series, perhaps the greatest baseball game played in the last 50 years, when Carbo, loose and easy, had uncoiled to tie the game that Fisk would win. It is now 8-7, one out, and school will never start, rain will never come, sun will warm the back of your neck forever. Now, Bailey, picked up from the National League recently, big arms, heavy gut experience, new to the league and the club, fouls off too, and then checking, tentative, a big man off balance, he pops a soft liner to the first baseman. It is suddenly darker and later. And the announcer doing the game coast to coast, the New Yorker who works for a New York television station, sounds relieved. His little world, well lit, hot combed, split second timed, has no capacity to absorb this much gritty, grainy, contrary reality. Cox swings a bat, stretches his long arm, bends his back. The rookie from Pawtucket who broke in 2 weeks ago with a record 6 straight hits. The kid drafted ahead of Freddie Lynn. Rangy, smooth, cool. The count runs 2-2, and Cox swings. The ball beginning toward the mound, and then in a jaunty, wayward dance, skips past Bryles, fainting to the right, skimming the last of the grass, finding the dirt, moving now like some small, purposeful marine creature negotiating the green deep, easily avoiding the jagged rock of second base and traveling steady and straight now out into the dark, silent recesses of center field. Well, the aisles are jammed, the place is on its feet, the wrappers, the program, the Coke cups and peanut shells, the detritus of an afternoon, the anxieties, the things that have to be done tomorrow, the regrets about yesterday, the accumulation of a summer, all forgotten, while hope, the anchor, bites and takes hold, where a moment before it had seemed we would be swept out with the tide. Rice is up. Rice, who Aaron had said was the only one he'd seen with the ability to break his records. Rice, the best clutch hitter on the club with the best slugging percentage in the league. Rice, so quick and strong, he once checked his swing halfway through and snapped the bat in two. Rice, the hammer of God, sent to scourge the Yankees. The sound was overwhelming. Fathers pounded their sons on the back. Cars pulled off the road. Households froze. New England exulted in its blessedness and roared its thanks for all good things, for Rice and for a summer stretching halfway through October. Bryles threw. Rice swung. And it was over. One pitch, fly to center, and it stopped. Summer died in New England, and like rain sliding off a roof, the crowd slipped out of Fenway quickly, with only a steady murmur of concern for the drive ahead remaining of the roar. Dame mutability had turned the seasons and translated hope to memory once again. And once again, she had used baseball, our best invention to stay change, to bring change on. That is why it breaks my heart, that game. Not because in New York they could win, because Boston lost. In that, there's a rough justice and a reminder to the Yankees of how slight and fragile are the circumstances that exalt one group of human beings over another. It breaks my heart because it was meant to. Because it was meant to foster in me again the illusion that there was something abiding. Some pattern and some impulse that could come together to make a reality that would resist the corrosion. And because after it had fostered again that most hungered-for illusion, the game was meant to stop and betray precisely what it promised. Now, of course there are those who learn after the first few times. They grow out of sports. And there are others who are born with the wisdom to know that nothing lasts. These are the truly tough among us, the ones who can live without illusion or without even the hope of illusion. But I am not that grown up or up to date. I am a simpler creature, tied to more primitive patterns and cycles. I need to think something lasts forever. And it might as well be that state of being that is a game. It might as well be that in a green field in the sun. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.